Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie. Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Ask the experts in our 17 showrooms nationwide. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Europe is warming at twice the average global rate, with the three hottest years on record occurring since 2020. This has led to more flooding, more heat waves and greater impacts on people's health, particularly from record summer temperatures in Europe. That's all according to the European Union's Climate Service, Copernicus, and the World Meteorological Association. Well, Professor John Sweeney, climate scientist and emeritus professor at Maynooth University, is on the line. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Claire.
Now, none of this, I know, will come as a surprise to you, but it is very worrying for the rest of us to hear. Will you just take us through the main points of the report, the ones that we should really be paying attention to?
Well, I suppose this you might class as the report card for Europe's climate in 2023. And unlike many report cards, it's not simply a case of must do better coming out as an overall conclusion. The picture it paints is rather bleak, and as you say, it won't come as a surprise to many people. But what it does tell us is, of course, that Europe has now exceeded the 1.5 degree threshold that we signed up to in the Paris Agreement. It's a short-term exceedance. It may well go back and down again, but it does, if you like, ring warning bells for us. And secondly, of course, we've seen last year the marine heat wave off the west coast of Ireland, where we had water temperatures 5 degrees and more above normal. We don't know in Ireland what the consequences even of that will be as yet. And we also had, Copernicus tell us, the biggest ever wildfire in Europe. That's something which destroyed land equivalent to, in that one fire, equivalent to more than 50% the area of County Dublin. And on top of all of that, of course, we saw the catastrophic flooding that occurred in Europe. And we saw also, of course, that wasn't unique to the continent. We saw it also in Ireland. So all of that is painting a picture of a climate that's changing perhaps more quickly than even our climate models were suggesting. Mm-hmm. And all of that is really, I suppose, telling us that, you know, we're on the slippery slope if we don't take action very quickly.
And perhaps one of the most concerning tipping points that would affect Ireland is the potential collapse of the Atlantic circulation currents. Now, John, will you tell us about that and what the science here tells us?
Well, climate scientists have for a long time tried in their models to, if you like, topple the Atlantic circulation, the Gulf Stream, which brings us so much heat and moisture to us here in Ireland. And we generally thought that this would be not of concern before the end of this current century. But there is growing concern that things are moving a little quicker and that it may well be something that we have to sit up and take notice of rather more quickly than we thought. What it would mean for us here in Ireland, of course, would be fairly catastrophic changes, dislocation to our climate, because the oceanic influence, which is so important, would be much less reduced. And it's caused, of course, by melting freshwater ice, if you like, from the Arctic, disrupting the very heavy meridional current that comes across the Atlantic and causing it to plunge much further south and expose us to much colder conditions during the winter time, especially. Now, it's something that, you know, we don't think is going to happen in the next few decades, but it's something that if we continue to warm at the current rate, then it's capable of being perhaps a growing threat, a growing tipping point in the decades ahead.
And what about the response to this? Because we have seen a lot of controversy over green measures in Europe, like the Nature Restoration Law, for example. What do you make of the political reaction to the climate crisis, the worsening climate crisis that Europe faces?
I think it's quite disappointing that politicians across Europe and even here in Ireland are downplaying the importance of climate change. I think the Irish public is very much further ahead on this issue than many of our politicians. But I'm very disappointed that in the past few weeks, we've seen the stalling of the nature restoration law. We've seen the gutting of environmental measures in the common agricultural policy. And we've seen the EU's five-year strategic agenda being more concerned with, if you like, bullets in business rather than climate change, where it was a much more prominent feature in the past. So I think, you know, the Irish public have a great deal of confidence in them. They know what's involved here. They know what's involved in terms of sacrifices now for their future, for their grandchildren's future. But our politicians seem more concerned with not making sacrifices for the next few weeks in terms of not alienating people by making radical decisions and making radical choices. And let's be honest here, we're looking at a very large expenditure of taxpayers' money. We've spent over the past 40 years 500 billion euros on the cost of extreme weather and climate events. That's more than the EU spends on all its policies and programs. So the cost of doing nothing greatly exceeds the cost of taking action now. And that's why it's so disappointing, if you like, that we're sitting on our hands politically. We're not prioritising it the way we should because of fears of losing a few votes in the forthcoming election.
Well, let's hear from Oisin Coughlan now, Chief Executive of Friends of the Earth Ireland. And Oisin, you hear John there saying that he has confidence in the Irish public, but he's concerned about what politicians might do with an eye on elections. Do you agree?
I mean, I do, and we have some polling to actually back up the point that John is making about the disconnect between where politicians are at and where the public are at, which is more in favour of action. I think the Copernicus report shows that climate change is really hitting home, and people are realising that more and more in the extreme weather we're seeing in Ireland. My first thing I'd say is we need not to lose hope about our ability to make a difference. And that's why, although we don't have the official figures yet, it looks like emissions dropped in Ireland last year by 4 to 5%. So the policies that we've been adopting can make a difference. And then secondly, we need to not give up. Politicians, just as they're making a difference, need to not give up on taking action on climate. And that's what looks like is the worry now. And I agree with John, it's something to do with vibes, I think. You know, 5 years ago it was Greta Thunberg and the climate strikes. And this time it's a small number of vocal protesters around Europe who politicians are worried represent some groundswell. Well, the good news is for politicians and for the climate is that in the data from this Ireland Thinks poll that we are publishing today, there's no sign of any groundswell in the Irish public against climate action, no sign of any backlash. We're seeing, in fact, that Irish people regard climate as a serious problem still, just as they did a couple of years ago. In fact, over half of them are more worried now than they were 2 years ago. And when you ask them to rank their issues for the European elections and more generally for the country as a whole, climate comes in at about 20% of people have climate as one of their top three issues. That's one in five voters. So far more than, say, the people who are going to vote for the Green Party at 4%. This is an all-party issue, not a single-party issue. And when you look at the individual measures, there's plenty of support for the kinds of things we need to do, that the government needs to do, to help people make the transition.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not questioning your figures, but I suppose when people say that climate is top of their agenda, are they worried perhaps at the measures that need to be taken that might affect them if you're working in farming, for example?
Well, that's why we did this. It's important to actually ask then about the specific measures, not just because it's easy to be in favour of things in principle. How about in practice? So, for example, you mentioned farming. 82% of people, 4 in 5 people surveyed, want us to pay farmers more for what we need most from the land: local food, clean water, and less climate pollution. That's a very strong mandate. 3 in 4 voters want to reduce the use of chemical fertilizer and regulate that. And half of people want to support farmers to diversify away from beef and dairy, compared to 37% who don't. So majorities in each case, big majorities in some cases, want to see the government do the practical support for farmers, which is why it's very surprising last week that the Minister for Agriculture said he was scrapping the idea of a dairy reduction scheme for paying farmers to help diversify away from beef and dairy, when actually the public and the science says that's exactly what we should be doing. So again, there seems to be a disconnect between where the public is at, because in the case of that measures. Both the ICMSA and the environmental pillar of environmental NGOs were giving out about the government scrapping that scheme. So the government seems to be overly timid, trying to avoid avoiding annoying small slices of voters, but at the risk of our future being really compromised. Mm-hmm. And we'll be back here in 5 years' time saying the government didn't do enough, and now the public are up in arms about the impacts of climate change. So the politicians need to stay the course, and our data shows that they have the public backing to do that.
Okay. John, do you agree with that, that perhaps politicians are overestimating the amount of pushback when it comes to climate action?
I do indeed. I think what they tend to highlight are the costs of taking action, but what they don't highlight are the costs of inaction. And I think the general public know that if we can save 5 to 8 billion, for example, on fossil fuel imports, we can spend that in a lot better ways. We can improve health and well-being. We can improve our security, energy security. We can do a lot of good things with money which we're throwing at making this problem worse. And I think, you know, the problem really is that the cost-benefit analysis is only highlighted one way. It's only highlighted in terms of the radical changes we need to make now, but the benefits down the road are huge for the Irish economy. They're huge for the Irish people. And I think we mustn't lose sight of the fact that we are emitting at the moment 5 times as much greenhouse gas emissions as the least developed countries. We're emitting more than 50% more than the EU average. So there's no point in looking or pointing the finger at China or India if we're not delivering the goods ourselves. Okay. And if we go down the road looking for money, that's going to come back to haunt us.
Professor John Sweeney and Oisín Coughlan, thank you both for joining us on the programme.